News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
All right, I'm number one in the industry with overpromising and underperforming. I'm number one in that same thing, but not just in this industry, but that's a different story altogether. I wanted to, just as we were going over some of the clips of the day about some of the big news and the bad news about the smoke that we're inhaling, hear from Kelsey McEwen, who said this earlier today.
Sunday into Monday, we've got a Colorado low that's brewing. And what that's going to do, it means this weather system kind of forming in the Colorado area. It's going to travel its way very slowly up the U.S. this kind of into the weekend. Looking at the outlook for Sunday evening, rain arrives in Ontario. And as that rain moves its way in, lasting into Monday and perhaps even into Tuesday as it pushes into Quebec, it almost pressure washes the lower atmosphere. It's going to help clear out that smoke. It drags that particulate matter down to the surface and cleans out the air.
Kelsey McEwen, earlier today, meteorologist on the Vashi Capello show. Right now, you're enjoying the lovely mellifluous tone of Jim Richards, joined by John Torrey Jr., who's an airline industry expert and political commentator. Kareem Assad joins us right now, political commentator, lawyer, and satirist. Okay, guys, how are you breathing today? Kareema?
I'm in Ottawa right now, and it's not so bad out here, so...
Were you there yesterday?
No, I got here today, so I didn't see the orange skies.
You didn't have any problem? You didn't notice it at all? It didn't smell campfire-y?
I might now at this point just be nose blind to it. I'm not sure. Right. But I feel good.
I'm glad. How about you? How's your nose doing, John?
Oh, it's okay. You know, it's better than the allergies I was going through for like the first 2 months of the warm season, but it's definitely a weird time when you can see and taste the air. It's weird.
Okay, John, I want you to tell this story, if you do not mind. It is a Toronto District School Board, a school basically saying, hey, we're going to have drag library book reading, but they sent out a form for parents to opt into instead of opt out to. And I think the problem that I would have, although I'm not outraged by it because I get the climate right now and I wouldn't want to get, you know, some parent with their hair on fire yelling at a teacher or yelling at the drag performer or yelling at the principal. I get it that I think it's the appropriate thing to pass out the form to have somebody opt out, but I don't believe it should be opt in. It should be presumed to be a normal thing that we are accepting of other people. And essentially to kids, I think they probably just look at these flamboyant characters and think they're kind of like clowns. Clowns don't have a good reputation anymore, though. That's my point, John.
Yeah, it's definitely, this is all about the lost art of clowning, Jim. I think you really found the issue here. And yeah. No, it's a My kids go to this school, and I was part of the group of parents who were outraged by what happened, and it drove a big response, which I think had the TDSB, look, they reversed on their policy, and then they've since given a series of very creative non-answers as to questions that people like me have specifically about how did this become policy. Of all the things that happened in a school, of all the special speakers who come in to talk about different aspects of our culture and our society, why does this one get an opt-in and none other? So it was very, very targeted at one particular segment of the gay community, which was just, it just left a terrible taste in people's mouths. And all we got told was that it was TDSB policy across all schools. And then there was absolutely nothing to back that up. So a lot of people are still wondering, how did this become policy? How did a bunch of people sit down in a room, a bunch of trustees and governors and various other things of our school system, our public school system, how did they sit down and decide that this was the right way to go forward? I understand what you're saying about people's sensitivity. And so maybe if you deem the climate to be such where you have to give a heads up,
yeah,
that's, you know, fine. But it's more of the part about making it an opt-in instead of an opt-out. And I'll just finish on this. For me, it's about equality and inclusion and making sure that everybody's included. But we need to remember, too, that for the gay community, you know, drag is a big form of art, and art is often the language of the oppressed. And it's not too long ago we have the bathhouse raids or we have serial killers being ignored. Mm. And this is part of how we hear from people who had a very, very hard time, and many who still do in our society. And it doesn't get better when you sort of say, well, we're going to make this one so special that people need a special form just to be able to go see it. So thanks. Yep, people are pissed.
Well said. Karima?
I think that the notion of balancing rights is one that the boards are grappling with right now, because this is a hot button political issue, and the discourse around this has changed a great deal over even the past decade, and it's one that it is contentious. And so I think the board, in making this an opt-in, it requires parents to make an informed, or, you know, however much informed, decision as to what their kid is seeing to avert potential crises, because we've seen and are seeing protests outside of schools, and I think that that's something to avoid and try to deter and diffuse.
Yeah. I agree with both of you. You're not in a good position where you're asking people to opt in. It should be an opt out. And I don't think any of us have a problem with an opt out, do we?
No, and you're still going to have the protests if they want to come protest. If it's an opt out, they will. You're not changing anyone's rights balance by making it opt in as, oh, well, you are. You're in theory identifying a particular part of the gay community and saying, they are such that we need to make their event opt in. Whereas, for example, the people who come in and speak for Black History Month are not opt in events. Not that I'm saying they should be. I'm just saying the board has applied a very targeted and specific lens of discrimination.
John, I don't think that it's that much of a stretch. We see all these pictures through civil rights fights where, you know, a young Black girl in Alabama is being spat on during, desegregation of the school board. Were there people back then going, this is being shoved down our throat because we have to, in many ways, it's not much different than accepting people for who they are, especially when you're the crowd that says, hey, freedom, and we're not judging, but we don't want it shoved down our throat. I'm reminded by Kathleen Wynne once telling me that she grew up her entire life knowing she was gay, didn't see any gay people on TV, only saw symbols that were straight, never made her straight. So what are you actually afraid of? Well, we're afraid of the kids. Yeah, but nothing's going to happen.
No, they're afraid of a bite. Sorry, go ahead, Karima.
Well, I think we have to be cautious about drawing total parallels between different human rights issues. But, you know, the crux of it is that there's misinformation and disinformation and people misrepresenting each other's positions. And so when that happens, it's very easy to portray the other side as the bad guy, but that's not helpful or productive. So as long as people are not being genuine and real about what is at issue, right? And what is the nature of the programming? And these are not conversations that are really well resolved through protest outside.
So as an example, though, like one of the topics that gets Karima is the newer last 10 years, whatever, sex ed curriculum, but there's no opt-in for that. It's opt-out. My particular issue isn't that people are going to choose to opt-out. It's that the board made it so, you know, active consent, as so to say, this routine event that they've been doing for years is now one where people have to opt in. And my point about other groups wasn't to draw immediate parallels, was to say no other group has that bar that a student has to clear in order to be exposed to the experience. I completely, even though I don't always agree with the motivations for people opting out of things, I totally understand a parent's right to pull their child from certain things. It's the part where they made it opt-in. They set the bar too high in order to have a message of equality and inclusion.
Oh, man, that sex ed curriculum thing had me so angry, because it was never... Any of the things that people were claiming were never in there, but they got to define the thing before the McGuinty government defined it. Thus, they were left in the dust, SOL, because that was the talking point, and you couldn't convince anybody otherwise. We're just getting started. Karima Saad is with us, political commentator, lawyer, and satirist, and John Tory Jr., airline industry expert and political commentator. As am I, Jim Richards.
This is the iHeartRadio Talk Network. And News Talk Tonight continues with Jim Richards.
So the government is proposing taking what we've seen basically since the outset of the COVID pandemic, MPs being able to participate in the House of Commons debate and voting whether they are in the House or not. So this was started.
I don't like it at all. Here is MP Mark Holland earlier today introducing this.
But over the last year or so, we've settled into a new normal where we've been able to use the hybrid provisions of Parliament and be able to ensure that the government is accountable and present, but also that members of Parliament have the flexibility to be able to be in their ridings for important.
So apparently they weren't doing a very good job prior to the pandemic. They weren't able to connect with their constituents enough. I know I'm not making an argument that them being in their community more would allow them to do that if they were so enthused. But I don't really like the idea. I don't like being in downtown Toronto and having it at half capacity. I don't like the fact that most of the, you know, the path, which is a mall underneath the skyscrapers in Toronto, is still empty and struggling. And I'm not going to be able to convince everybody that we should go back to 2019, 2018. But I don't see the reason to do this. We have politicians in this country saying, hey, you know, vote for me to be mayor of Toronto because we'll make things vibrant again and we'll get more people back on the TTC. Well, until you, City of Toronto, stop with your hybrid method, why would anybody want to follow anything that you say? But let's digress. Are you a fan of this idea, Karima, or do you think they should go back to business as usual 2019 Parliament styles?
A strong opinion on it one way or the other. I think that if we apply the logic that work from home productivity, right, has actually increased in some cases, for others it's decreased, so it should be based on that metric, right? And if not having to be physically present in Ottawa does mean more local community outreach, especially for those who are far away from the capital, that seems logical, but I don't know that they do much anyway. So look, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah. Listen, I heard the argument earlier today, John, that people think that it's a glamorous job, but you get back to your riding and you're kissing babies and cutting ribbons and getting your name out there because, you know, you don't want to let anybody down because you said you would do this for us and you didn't. So you're probably working just as much, but I don't know. Parliament is for our representatives, and that's in Ottawa. And I think that that should continue that way.
There's an ancient tradition to any democratic assembly that goes back to like Rome and things that you need to be present and you need to be able to see your colleagues, your opponents and your peers and read body language. It's all about the convening of people and having them together. And so I think there is something missing when it's done virtually. I will say, though, I did take interest in the part of the comment where it said they might be able to attract more people to public life and to representing Canadians because the working conditions, you know, it's easy for us to say here in Toronto because the seat of government's in Ottawa. But if you're in, you know, Smithers, BC, that's a whole, you lose 2 days every time you have to go to work. And if it's just to go and do relatively procedural things, maybe it is a sign of the future. I would say this, though, if they can figure out a way for them to vote from home, then I want them to figure out a way where I can vote from home.
That's well said. Yeah. Listen, I like what you just said. I can't imagine, you know, if you were a young father or mother and you had young kids that you would leave back in whatever town, British Columbia or Newfoundland or wherever it might be. I'm arguing against myself now. But maybe there is time when you have the option for, but I would say it needs to be allocated in a way like, hey, you can use this. It's like a get it a jail free pass that you could use it for a week or 2 weeks once a year, but you wouldn't want to abuse it if I was running things. And I think we all know that I'm not, unfortunately. David Johnston ends his relationship with crisis communications firm Navigator. That I don't know, it's either just window dressing Karima, or they couldn't help the guy who didn't want to help himself. And at this point, despite the fact I believe that he is as pristine as Justin Trudeau would say he is, just the image is not good for moving forward.
And if it's my understanding, part of the reason for this departure was that the same crisis communications firm had been hired by the Liberal MP who's suing Global. So, you know, the appearance of conflict there as well, and kind of awkward if different parties are using the same firm to try and influence the public's opinion, right? Because that's what this is about, influencing public opinion.
I want to move on, if we could, to Pierre Poilievre. Over the past couple of days, he has been promising that he is not going to sleep.
And I will keep speaking and keep speaking and keep blocking this inflationary train wreck until the Prime Minister rises with a plan to balance the budget and bring down inflation and interest rates.
And so he was on this radio station in Toronto about two hours ago, having the budget passed and having the Liberals rig things so he could only debate it last night. The vote happened today, and he did as much as he could last night, but he still is reiterating, and this is only 2 hours ago.
I'm going to kick filibuster as long as I can, because we need to. I know Trudeau might shut down the House himself. There's rumors that he'll prorogue Parliament so that he can go on a nice long vacation again. But I'm saying to Justin Trudeau, cancel your vacation, put away the sunscreen and the surfboard. Let's throw this disastrous...
I don't know what... maybe there's a definition of filibustering that I'm not familiar with, John, but if the thing passed, doesn't filibustering end?
It does. So once they pass the debate clock, filibustering ends. They might try to find a procedural way to keep the debate going, but it's gone to the Senate, so it's over now. They're doing anything they can to stall it. This is fairly standard oppositional tactic. They know with the NDP support agreement, the Liberals have the votes to get their bill through, their budget through, and so they're not going to lose confidence. So this is really just about Pierre Poilievre positioning himself as being opposed to the budget, and then, of course, coming out with that message. This is him setting himself up to be a prime minister and waiting and saying, but, you know, I'm willing to work with them because we're all elected, blah, 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 you know, et cetera. It's a standard opposition politics, and that's it.
And it's probably when everybody's worried about the economy, maybe a recession around the corner, Karima, as much as it doesn't make sense, the optics are probably, hey, that guy's fighting for us.
Yeah, it's, you know, too bad that it's not always seen for the theatrics that it is, right? Where we know that it's not actually going to be effective at anything. It's on brand for Poilievre, and that, you know, it's endless, meaningless kind of yapping to stall something. But the optics as they present it, he's going to get some good sound bites in there, and that's what they'll run with.
And he definitely will. Okay, it's time for the final takes. Thank you very much for your time. John Torrey Jr., would you like to start?
Sure. And it probably won't surprise anyone to know that based on, you know, how fired up I was about our first story and about the TDSB's position on drag artists reading to students, et cetera, I'm just going to ask everybody who's out there, regardless of your view on it, never stop fighting for inclusivity and inclusion and equality and recognizing the value of diversity and that everyone has a different path to where they are today. Just never stop. It hit home for us earlier this week, and it was jarring, and it felt unusual, and we still don't have any clear answers. And so just never stop. Thank you.
All right. John, thank you very much for your time. Also, Karima Saad, a political commentator, lawyer, and contributor to the iHeartTalk Radio Network. Your final take?
So this is a shout-out to the Iron Sheik, who passed away this week. Pro wrestling legend. He was a favorite at our house, even though his prime was before my time. And, you know, in hearing people recount stories about him, The Rock had this little anecdote that I think we can all learn from, where he, in his early days in the locker room, was told by the Iron Sheik that you sit down, you watch, you listen, you learn, and you understand that way who are the good people and who are the jabronis.
Well said. Rest in peace. Guys, thank you very much for your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Rundown continue. No, that's the end of the rundown, folks. When we continue, though, it's the deep dive. What about the weather? Where are we heading? Our friend Dave Phillips, chief climatologist for Environment Canada, is on your radio in moments.